It was founded in 2004 out of feeling that Israeli academic institutions have got off the hook despite their deep complicity in planning, implementing, and whitewashing Israel's violations of international law and war crimes against the Palestinians. Israeli academic and cultural institutions are deeply implicated in the Israeli system of occupation, ethnic cleansing, apartheid, and total denial of basic Palestinian rights. So we felt that we had to resort to tactics used before by Palestinian civil society, as well as used in the anti-apartheid struggle in South Africa, to end this complicity between the academy, between the cultural institutions, and the state itself. A year after the PACBI, Palestinian Academic and Cultural Boycott Campaign, came into light, the BDS campaign was launched, the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions campaign on July 9th, 2005, 6 years from yesterday. So we're just commemorating the sixth anniversary. And that BDS call was signed by a great, huge majority of Palestinian civil society. The overwhelming majority signed the BDS call. And this includes Palestinians in the occupied territories of 1967, Palestinian citizens of Israel, as well as the majority of the Palestinian people, the refugees in exile, who were ethnically cleansed systematically in 1948 and ever since, and never allowed back home simply because they're not Jewish. They're the wrong type. So they were denied their basic right as all refugees to return home and receive reparations. The BDS call accordingly address the three basic rights of these three segments of the Palestinian people: ending the 1967 occupation, ending racial discrimination in Israel, and providing full equality to the non-Jewish citizens of the state, the indigenous Palestinians. Third and foremost is the right of return of refugees in accordance with UN Resolution 194. So the BDS call is based on universal principles of human rights and international law. As such, it opposes all forms of racism, including anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and so on. The Israeli Academy, is unlike the Academy anywhere else almost, is a key partner in the system, the multi-tiered Israeli system of oppression. So, for example, the recent war on Gaza, end of 2008, early 2009, when Israel was accused by the UN of committing war crimes, it was accused by major international human rights organizations of committing war crimes and of committing disproportionate force and collective punishment. But this disproportionate force was no coincidence. In fact, the doctrine used by the Israeli army in Gaza is called the doctrine of disproportionate force. It was developed at Tel Aviv University through workshops with the military, with the military industry, with the government. A series of workshops reached the conclusion that since Israel cannot effectively combat irregular resistance forces, as the Palestinian forces in Gaza, the most effective way to combat them, to suppress them, is through hurting the civilians, through punishing the civilians collectively, through damaging the civilian infrastructure so much that the civilians will do Israel's bidding, the hope goes, and pressure the resistance to stop. And this is exactly what Israel did in Lebanon in 2006, when it demolished most of the Dahiya al-Janubiya, or the southern suburb of Beirut. And in fact, the doctrine of disproportionate force is also called the Dahiya doctrine, in reference to the southern suburb of Beirut. So it was used twice in 2006 and then 2008-2009 in Gaza. This was developed at Tel Aviv University. So the planning for such a war crime was developed at Tel Aviv University. The Hebrew University, also Israel's most prestigious and important university, has one of its two campuses almost entirely built on occupied Palestinian territory in East Jerusalem. So it's not that Hebrew University is just whitewashing Israeli crimes. It's committing a war crime at that. It's in direct violation of the Fourth Geneva Convention. It has dispossessed Palestinians in occupied East Jerusalem, occupied their lands, and expanded its dormitories for its predominantly Jewish students and faculty. So it is committing a war crime itself. And there are Israeli colleges built on occupied territories other than Hebrew University, like Ariel College on the land of Salfit in occupied West Bank. It is necessary because everything else has failed. The international community, so to speak, with the total hegemonic leadership of the United States, which is Israel's main patron, partner, and defender, has made it impossible to hold Israel accountable to international law. So Israel has become truly a pariah and a nation above the law of nations. It is not held accountable to international law. It can commit massacres on the high seas, as was done against the flotilla last year, in Gaza, in Lebanon. It can bomb other countries like Syria, Iraq, and so on, without facing any punitive measures, without facing any form of justice. So because the international community, with the U.S. hegemony, has failed to hold Israel accountable, we had to resort to civil society. So, and it's very urgent because we're no longer just under a soft form of occupation, if you will, if any occupation is soft. It is intensifying. Palestinians are being thrown out of their lands in occupied East Jerusalem, in the Naqab, Negev Desert, as well, where Al-Araqib village, Bedouin village, was destroyed dozens of times by Israel so far. And this is on Israeli territory. These are Israeli citizens being thrown out of their homes, their homes being demolished, and their lands confiscated continuously simply because they're not Jews. Israel maintains a system of apartheid, which is getting far worse every year. And by that, we don't mean just an identical situation to what existed in South Africa, because apartheid is not a South African crime, it's a universal crime, defined in the UN Convention for the Suppression and Punishment of the Crime of Apartheid, which went into effect in 1976, as well as the 2002 Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. It defines the crime of apartheid as a systematic, legalized, institutionalized form of racial discrimination, of suppression by one racial group against another. And this is exactly what Israel has done through many laws that discriminate against its non-Jewish citizens, whereby only if you're Jewish can you claim the state to be yours. It's the state of the Jewish people, not of its citizens. So if you're not Jewish and a citizen of Israel, this is not your state. You can never become a national of the state of Israel. You have to be Jewish to become a national of the state of Israel. And any Jew in Britain can be a national of the state of Israel, while a Palestinian born in Israel cannot become a national of the state of Israel. So this rudimentary form of apartheid, although it's nuanced, although it's much smarter than the literally black-white apartheid in South Africa, is still apartheid. But it's getting far worse. With Israel's siege of Gaza, 1.5 million Palestinian civilians, predominantly civilians, are being subjected to horrific conditions of siege, whereby basic foodstuffs, basic construction material, even musical instruments are denied. People are dying increasingly of cancer and of kidney problems and of preventable diseases because they have no access to advanced medical care in neighboring countries. They're not allowed to go to their colleges. Some students who have scholarships to go study in the UK or the US or other places have failed to make it to class because Israel has denied them. So access to education, access to health services, access to construction material to rebuild the hundreds and thousands of homes and factories that were destroyed is just not there. So Palestinians cannot even rebuild, cannot reconstruct their demolished reality that Israel destroyed in its aggression in 2008-2009. So it's getting far worse. The siege is increasing, and Israel is intensifying its gradual still. It's not en masse, it's gradual ethnic cleansing of the Palestinians, especially in occupied Jerusalem and in parts of the Galilee and parts of the Naqab desert. Since 2005, since the BDS call, now, as I said, we're celebrating the sixth anniversary, the BDS movement has grown well beyond our most optimistic expectations. In fact, none of us could have imagined that after 6 years we'd be here, where we can pressure the Prime Minister of Britain to quit his honorary patron status in the Jewish National Fund, the JNF, because of its involvement in colonization and human rights violations, to have Veolia, the French company, involved in the Jerusalem Light Rail and other illegal projects, Israeli projects, to cost it billions, literally billions of dollars worth of contracts, especially in Britain, in Ireland, in Sweden, in France and other places, to have Deutsche Bahn, the German government-owned rail company, withdraw from an Israeli project connecting Tel Aviv and Jerusalem because it passes through occupied territories. The first time ever a German company is forced to quit an Israeli project because of its illegality. So the BDS movement has reached the ivory tower. The trade union support for BDS has been just outstanding, amazing success with the trade union movement. The Trades Union Congress of Great Britain, the TUC, representing some 6.5 million workers, has supported BDS and is implementing partial forms of BDS, especially targeting colonial settlement products in cooperation with the PSC, the Palestine Solidarity Campaign. So that's a gradual step towards a full boycott of Israel, as was done in South Africa. CUT, the Brazilian Trade Union Federation, representing some 22 million workers, has also endorsed BDS. COSATU, the South African Trade Union Federation, the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, the Scottish, several unions in Canada, France, Belgium, Norway, India, Turkey. It's really, truly growing. So when I said optimistically a couple of years ago, our South African moment has arrived, many people are now believing it. The claim that BDS, that any criticism of Israel, any boycott against Israel is anti-Semitic, the claim itself is anti-Semitic. And this is because it equates between the Jews and the state of Israel. Any attack on Israel is an attack on the Jews, on world Jewry. Anyone who reduces Jewish people around the world to one monolithic sum that's equivalent and identified totally with Israel is an anti-Semite by definition. Because what they're saying is that all Jews think alike. All Jews are the same. And as I've said earlier, anyone who says all Jews are dot, 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 regardless what comes after the R, is an anti-Semite. Because they're essentially saying that Jews, unlike other humans, have no diversity. They're not human beings. They're superhumans, as Zionists would like us to believe, or subhumans, as Nazis wanted us to believe. But in either case, they're not human. They're not normal humans that have diversity. And this is not just horrifically anti-Semitic and racist. This is so untrue. There's so much diversity in the Jewish communities around the world. There's so many anti-Zionist Jews, the International and Jewish Anti-Zionist Network. Many Jewish groups are joining BDS or working on BDS even without endorsing it yet, like the Independent Jewish Voices, Jewish Voice for Peace in the US, which is a very large Jewish organization with some 100,000 members. They're leading one of the biggest BDS campaigns in the US against TIAA-CREF, which is a pension fund of universities and health workers and so on. They're pressuring them to divest from five companies involved in the occupation. In the leadership of the BDS movement in the West, you'll find a disproportionate number of Jewish citizens, conscientious people. And these are not nutty cases or self-haters or whatever. They're very established, rational activists who refuse to allow Israel to use their name and speak on their behalf. And they insist that we stand for justice, regardless who's suffering from it. And they believe that never again should apply to anyone. Otherwise, it would be hypocritical if you say never again just to some people, but it's okay to be done to others. Since the war of aggression on Gaza, Israeli aggression on Gaza or massacre in Gaza, 2008-2009, an Israeli group supporting BDS has come into existence. It's called Boycott From Within, supporting the BDS call from within. And it's an increasingly important and influential group, still small, but increasingly influential within the Israeli public, especially in regards to cultural boycott campaigns. Boycott from Within has played a key role in convincing many artists, together with Packley, not to come to Israel, to cancel gigs in Israel, to cancel exhibits, and so on. Also, there's the Coalition of Women for Peace, which is a coalition of diverse women's group, feminist groups in Israel, that has supported BDS, and they produce an excellent resource for the BDS movement worldwide called whoprofits.org, which is as in who profits from the occupation. It's a database of most of the companies, international as well as Israeli, involved in the business of occupation, profiting from occupation. So it presents to us solid information that BDS activists worldwide can use to target specific companies for their involvement in international law violations. And there's ICAD, the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, and there's the Alternative Information Center. So there's a growing movement, if you will, of progressive, principled Israelis who are not interested in ending some form of oppression to whitewash other forms, like some on the so-called liberal Zionist groups, who would like to end the occupation simply to get rid of 4 million Palestinians and make Israel a stronger apartheid with an even more exclusionary and more dominant Jewish majority. That type of to put it mildly, inconsistent, morally inconsistent attitude is not really something that we can rely on. But our partners within Israel are principled. They're not like that. They support ending all forms of injustice, including inequality, ingrained, institutionalized, legalized inequality in Israel or apartheid in Israel. And this is the key point to anyone. This is the litmus test. If they support the right of Palestinian refugees to return and they support ending Israel's apartheid, then they're truly principled activists who believe in human rights for all and who do not have a double standard, so to speak. So it's growing in Israel, but that's at the on the margins still, because it's a small left group. In the Israeli mainstream, the discussion about boycott has reached the highest echelons because they were so alarmed, especially by the cultural boycott, but not just the trade unions, the dock workers' action. And I should mention that anecdotally, last year after the flotilla attack on May 31st, 2010, when everyone was so angry, we said, don't get angry, get justice. So we called on dock workers' unions around the world to stop offloading and loading Israeli ships. Besiege Israel's siege was the slogan. If they're besieging Gaza, we should besiege them and make the price higher for the siege of Gaza. Rather than just getting angry and burning Israeli flags around the world, that's fine, but it's not enough. It's never enough. We have to have action and we have to raise the price for Israel's aggression and forms of oppression. Dock workers' unions in Sweden, in Oakland, California, in the US, in Turkey, in India, in South Africa, heeded our call and indeed stopped loading or offloading Israeli ships for various durations. In California, it was 1 day, Sweden about 7 days, and so on. And that was a very, very effective form of solidarity with the Palestinians, especially those in Gaza, under siege. Because of all this, the cultural boycott as well, Roger Waters, the Pixies, Elvis Costello, Gil Scott-Heron, and so on and so on. Mike Lee here in the UK. With all these people boycotting Israel, some of them saying that they're boycotting, some of them just doing the silent boycott, what we call a silent boycott, boycotting and never giving reasons why. We have scheduling problems, we have whatever. We'll take that, no problem. As long as they do heed our call and do not undermine our boycott calls. Because of this cultural boycott's growth, immense growth, in the last... Because of the growth, immense growth, of the cultural boycott in the last year and a half or so, the Israeli establishment was extremely alarmed at the highest levels. Now the Israeli president, defense minister, and many, many ministers in government, prime minister, openly speak against BDS and say that this is a strategic threat. And some research institutions in Israel call it an existential threat. It can develop to an existential threat. And of course, in all this, they talk about delegitimizing. This is the new buzzword. BDS is delegitimizing Israel. It wants to destroy Israel. 5 years ago, I was speaking at the University of Manchester here in the UK when a very right-wing fanatic rabbi stood up and asked me, why aren't you honest with your three BDS demands? Ending occupation, I understand. The right of return, I totally oppose, but I still understand what you're talking about. But it's that second demand, ending inequality, having full equality for Palestinians in Israel. Why don't you just say it, that you want to destroy Israel? Why don't you be honest about it? So I told him, let me just understand what you just said. You're saying inequality, ending inequality would destroy Israel. What does that say about Israel? Has ending inequality destroyed South Africa? Ending apartheid destroyed South Africa? Has ending segregation in the U.S. destroyed the United States, southern states, that had an apartheid system? We did not call it apartheid then, but it was an apartheid system. Since when does ending inequality destroy anything? It destroys inequality. It destroys apartheid. It destroys injustice. That's what we're delegitimizing in Israel. It's occupation, it's apartheid, it's denial of our basic rights, it's ethnic cleansing. Yes, we're proud to be delegitimizing Israel's oppression, Israel's violations of international law. That does not call for ending the existence of any person or any group or anything. It does not target people as people. It targets a system of oppression so that all people can live in equality and justice. Resistance to oppression always alienates the oppressors. It's a rule in any resistance to colonial oppression throughout history. And the colonial community is never fond of it, of this resistance. They would like us to be complacent slaves who just take injustice as fate and just live with it, move on. Well, we won't move on. We'll continue resisting, and it will continue bothering them because it will it promises to deprive them of their colonial privilege. And no one is happy to give up simply their colonial privilege, as you know very well in Britain. It has to be pulled out from the colonial masters, that you can no longer be our colonial masters. We want to live in full equality and to have full rights. So yes, the great majority of Israelis are alienated by BDS, of course, and they band together, as some journalists called it, they circle the wagons, so to speak. And this tribalism becomes really extreme, and fascism is growing in Israel, as many, many leading academics and artists in Israel are saying. So yes, we know, but this happens in the beginning. Feeling that everyone is banding together and that the minority is dissenting, and the suppression of dissent in Israel is growing. There's an anti-BDS law being passed in the Knesset. It has not passed yet, but it's being passed in the Knesset that would prevent any Israeli citizen from supporting the boycott. So talk about basic freedom of speech. Just supporting this morally consistent, non-violent movement would be a crime in Israel. Soon it might become a law that this would be a crime in Israel. So this suppression reflects that they're really scared. And while people are scared, they do band together until the price becomes much higher. And then you'll see cracks in this wall of silence in Israel and wall of complicity in Israel, where almost all Israelis are complicit, almost all. All cultural institutions, all academic institutions, all economic institutions, everyone is complicit, with very few exceptions. But we've seen it before. We've seen it in South Africa. We've seen it with the British colonial rule, French colonial. We've seen it before. When the publics do not pay a price, they say, well, we're enjoying the fruits of colonialism and apartheid and oppression. Why can't we continue? It raises our standard of living. And Israel is indeed having an excellent economic development year after year. It's almost completely integrated into Europe, into the world economy, and it's enjoying the benefits of billions and billions of dollars of your tax money, American tax money, German tax money, that's subsidizing its occupation and apartheid. So why should it stop oppressing us? Why should it question? Why should people question ending the occupation and oppression? Only when the price goes higher, as we're doing. And that's why BDS is truly alarming to the establishment, the colonial establishment in Israel. It promises to threaten their hegemony and their privilege. And once that happens, we'll see the dissents. That's what happened in South Africa. And we've studied the South African experience very closely, very, very closely. And we're in direct touch with leaders of the ANC, leaders of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa as well as outside, in the international solidarity groups. And from that experience, we've learned that if we keep at it with moral consistency, with continuous pressure, the system will start cracking, and then we'll see a lot of dissent. There's an overwhelming majority supporting BDS in Palestine, truly overwhelming. I mean, the number of groups that are not supporting BDS are so few, true, a very short list of groups. Just recently on May Day, celebrating May Day, almost the entire Palestinian trade union movement formed for the first time in history, the Palestinian Trade Union Coalition for BDS, which has almost everyone in the trade union movement, professional unions as well as workers unions. So we're talking about teachers, public employees, everyone is in this PTUC, Palestinian Trade Union Coalition for BDS. So it has become the biggest reference for Palestinian labor movement around the world, and it's increasingly becoming recognized as such. So we're seeing BDS is growing tremendously. Now, some people say, but if BDS really bites, the Palestinians will suffer economically because Israel will hurt them even more. It will become an even more aggressive colonial master, and it will punish them tremendously. And to an extent, that's true. But again, the darkest era of apartheid in South Africa was the last stage. Truly, the darkest period before the light. And we're going through that stage. We've never had anything like the massacre in Gaza. We have not had that in decades from Israel. So it's clearly intensifying. It's getting far worse for us. But Palestinians tell those in solidarity, do not speak on our behalf, please. Do not decide whether we can or cannot pay the price. We know that resistance is costly. Any resistance, non-violent, any resistance is costly. The best thing, pragmatically, is just not to resist. Accept slavery as fate and carry on with your life as a slave. But we cannot live as slaves. The great majority of Palestinians refuse to live as slaves to a colonial master, and we insist on resisting to achieve our full rights. And we understand, we are rational beings. We understand there's a price to be paid, and we're ready to pay that price. So we ask solidarity groups, do not decide on our behalf. Even if BDS will eventually hurt us, we're ready to pay the price, to see the light at the end of the tunnel. There are so many reasons why they should boycott Israel. First is because if they perform in Israel, if they entertain apartheid, they're complicit. So we're asking them not to be heroic, not to, you know, join us in the barricades, as it were, to fight oppression. We're asking them to stop complicity in whitewashing apartheid, in whitewashing Israeli occupation. That's not a huge thing to ask. Asking people don't be a partner in crime is not a huge favor that we're asking them to do. We're asking them to be morally consistent and say, I refuse to be part of covering up a system of oppression, of human rights violations. But some might say art is above politics. You know, as artists, we sing, we perform, we make films, we paint. That's not political. We speak to all humans and we talk about human harmony and peace and healing. Some are into this healing business quite a lot recently. And what our response is, well, if you're really interested in healing and peace and speaking to humanity, don't be part of inhumanity. Don't be part of suppressing human rights and of injuring rather than healing. Because if you come to Israel, regardless what you sing, you can sing about love or you can sing even about BDS for all we care. It would not matter. Israel will use your presence to present itself as a normal state with a thriving culture and just business as usual continues. So you will be undermining our non-violent civil resistance. You'll be crossing our boycott picket line. So we're asking people, do not cross our picket line. That's a basic moral obligation that we're asking you. If you feel more inclined to help our struggle, then there are many other forms you can help it with, like spread the boycott and convince your friends to boycott and convince your association, artistic association, to boycott and to divest from Israel, companies profiting from Israel, and so on. But at the minimal level of human decency, you should not be entertaining apartheid. You should not be allowing your name to be used to cover up Israel's human rights violations. That's even worse. That's even worse. It's not just covering up apartheid, it's even profiting from apartheid, using accolades given by the apartheid Israeli state, prestigious awards, sometimes very lucrative awards. It shows complete disregard for our suffering, of Israeli oppression of the Palestinian people, even people who come and accept awards from the Israeli state and speak against the occupation as if that makes it okay. We tell them, you don't decide for us how you can help us, because some of them are so colonial, so patronizing, that this is for this is in the Palestinians' best interest. Please, don't speak on our behalf. You don't know what our best interest is. When the great majority of Palestinian civil society tell you the best thing you can do for us is to boycott, you don't lecture us what's in our best interest. It is so colonial, it is so passé, it is so anachronistic, so it's so imperial even, especially coming from British artists. I mean, it is so passé to lecture to the Palestinians what's in our best interest. So speaking against occupation or not is irrelevant. You're shaking hands with the Israeli president, with the mayor of Jerusalem, with people very deeply involved in committing war crimes, in committing violations of human rights. Just accepting an award from the State of Israel is complicity, simple and direct complicity in covering up the state's violations of international law.